This podcast is offered by Wildflowers and Sangha. A Dharma Talk by Roshi Amy to SLR Hollowell.
Good evening, everyone. Bonsoir. Bonne nuit. I'm delighted to be here with you. It's wonderful to see everyone. After, I think, 3 weeks that I've not been here on a Thursday. I've been present the past 2 Mondays, but just for sitting, not talks. And I'm very happy to be here. And it's great to see that, to know that this was happening even when I was not here. even when I was not here is not necessarily, because I know you're all practicing, and I know that Joe has been holding the space, and I appreciate it very much. And I've been with you even if I haven't been appearing on the screen. So it's been, another period of uncertainty and unrest, for each of us in our individual lives. The situation is constantly changing in terms of the pandemic and what the governments are deciding for us, and whether you are sick or not, whether you know people who are sick, what that means for your children, for your work, for your families. And then, of course, we have those of us who are American, but not only, because everyone is concerned about the current election situation in America. This is an added level of uncertainty and stress and anxiety and fear. And it's really exceptional times that we're living through. And the two, of course, I use my own example because that's what is my closest experience, is my own example. And so having been sick again, I've delved into some of the things I went through last time. Let's say that, I found myself very quickly caught in the space of either projecting ahead to the future. So what will happen? How sick will I be? How will it evolve? Will I manage? My husband is sick too. How will we manage all these things? And also grasping, hanging on to the past of how it was last time, and not wanting it to happen again like that, not wanting to experience that, or hanging on to, I recovered, so I will recover again. All of this was projecting forward or hanging on to the past. And very quickly I realized that this would only take me down the path of more anxiety, more stress, more fear, more suffering. And I was inspired by a quote from the American Zen teacher Joan Halifax, who said this in relation to the American situation in particular, but also the overall issues of our times with the climate crisis, the pandemic, political unrest, violence, inequality, all of this that we're all experiencing in different degrees. And she said, I feel like I've practiced my whole life for this moment. And I thought, yes, that's it. that exactly I feel the same way. All of these years of practice have been for this very moment. The same thing is true of every moment, but this moment in particular, which is so extreme. And I was inspired by that because that helped me then to say, okay, well, so what is my practice? What has been my practice all these years? How many years now? 27 years. So all of these years have been what? When I say, I feel this in my heart, they have all been for this moment, but what do I mean by that? And the very, very simply, what it did, that statement, was bring me back to this moment. To, okay, so I received this diagnosis of COVID positive. Second time, right? This is like extremely bad luck, right? Already bad luck to get it once, but then to get it twice, you know? And in the initial moments of devastation and despair and self-pity and all everything that was going on, to come back to just this moment and not project ahead or cling to the past was such a moment of deep relaxation. It's just this, just right now. What's happening right now? And to the point of even just this breath, not the next breath, not the next moment, just right now, this moment. And that was such a powerful, powerful experience of relaxing, of ease, that that was more inspiration to do that again. And that's what my practice has been about all these years, is just this moment. And letting go, not projecting, not clinging, and just being with what is. And that helped me throughout these 2 weeks. Now, I can't say that it was always easy. I will say that I was not as sick this time as I was last time, which, you know, the doctor says it's because I've developed antibodies that, you know, protect me. so that was easier, but it was also, I had a similar experience the previous time, but because it was a different moment, it manifested differently. But it really helped me these past 2 weeks. And then added to these past 2 weeks have been the build up to the American election, which has been incredibly stressful and full of anxiety and fear. And yesterday I read, among all the things that I've been reading and observing, I read a journalist for The New Yorker who said she had been all day, all election day and yesterday, when the results were coming in. She's of Russian origin, but she now lives in the US. She's an American citizen. And she said she had been inspired by a poem by Osip Mandelstam, who was a famous Russian poet who died in the 1930s in Stalin's gulags. And he was actually sent to the gulag because of this poem that he wrote. But these first two lines really spoke to me, and they speak to our practice. So the two lines are, we live without sensing the country beneath us. Our speech is inaudible at 10 paces. And she said that this spoke to her because the first line, we live without sensing the country beneath us, she said, she was so disoriented and so disbelieving at the results that were coming in from this election, that it was so close, that half the population was supporting Donald Trump, And she said, it didn't correspond to what I thought of or hoped for about my country. And it was as if she couldn't feel the country. And so she took this line, we live without sensing the country beneath us. And then the second line, our speech is inaudible at 10 paces. She said this for her was so, spoke to her, because she's saying we, the American people, we're deaf to each other. We don't hear the others. We're mute. We speak, but no one hears us. And in this moment of social distancing, we can't even get between 10 feet of each other. And so then it's even harder to hear each other. And we can't even really see each other fully because half of our face is covered by a mask. And she said she kept thinking about these words, these lines all day long. And when I heard these lines, this spoke to me. I understand exactly what she's saying. I feel exactly the same way. The results of the election don't correspond to any experience I have of people I know or talk to or read or anything. It doesn't correspond to the country that I hope for or wish for or think about. And yet what these lines say to me is deeply relates to our practice in the sense that our country, ourselves, we can't feel ourselves if we are holding to an idea of who we are, who we want to be, who we hope we are. And it's very disorienting. We live our lives in this disorientation because we can't feel ourselves, because we're caught up in an image, an idea, something that we wish for the future, or something we're grasping to the past, or some image that we've constructed. And we do this on a micro level within ourselves in our various situations. So I could apply that to my sickness. You know, if I'm attached to being well, to not being sick, to not having a symptom, to how I want to be, well, I'm just going to suffer and I'm not going to really feel myself because that's not who I am. That's not what's happening. This moment is not that. And then I become even more disoriented and more disbelieving. You know, this, how can this happen to me? How can this be happening to me? What bad karma? You know, my husband gave this to me. He was so irresponsible. You know, whatever. That corresponds to we don't sense the country beneath our feet. We don't even feel the ground that we're walking on because we're projecting, we're thinking we're somewhere else or we want to be somewhere else. Or we really are attached to where we are and therefore we can't accept losing that place. And in terms, it's the same about not hearing. We can't hear our heart. It's inaudible. Our heart is inaudible when we are 10 paces away. When we are not close to our heart, when we're not intimate with ourselves, when there's a gap between ourselves and ourselves, we can't hear ourselves. And if we can't hear ourselves, we can't hear the others. And so this gap just becomes wider and wider and wider with ourselves and with others. And you know, this probably makes sense when you're listening to it to some degree. Or maybe it doesn't, Maybe you're thinking, well, yeah, of course, when you're sick, you don't want to be sick. It's true. It's true. However, I just add suffering to my pain if I start clinging to not wanting to be sick and not wanting what is and projecting to something else. You know, I would love to have turned on the computer yesterday morning and seen, oh, Joe Biden won in a landslide. Well, that's not what happened. And that's still not what's happening. And very quickly, that my practice, I've been practicing for this moment of letting go, of not attaching to a desired result. It doesn't mean I don't want a certain result, but I'm not hanging on to that. I'm just staying with this moment, just this breath, in fact. And sometimes when you have a hard time breathing, like I did, staying with this breath is not so easy, you know? So I'm not saying this is easy. I like this story of, I don't know where it is in the sutras, but somewhere, Joa might know, but a man asks the Buddha, I want happiness. He says to the Buddha, I want happiness. And the Buddha says, first, remove I. That's the ego, or however you want to call it. That's the self, the attachment to the self. Then remove want. That's desire. That's hanging on to a desire. And now you're left with happiness. Very simple, right? Not easy. Because that's a huge program right there. Letting go of I. Letting go of want. But then really, truly, truly, experience will show you. I'm talking about my experience, but I know from my experience and my experience of others' experience that you are left with happiness when you can let go of I and want. It's true. That's happiness. And then I can truly feel the country beneath my feet. And I can truly hear and speak and be heard. And that makes a difference. That makes a difference individually. And then that makes a difference in how you interact with others and how you experience the world. Because when we're full of stress and anxiety and fear, it makes a mess. You know, we make a mess of ourselves and we make a mess of our relationships. And we live in fear, and so therefore we grasp, cling. Anger arises. Because behind anger, actually, there's fear. And, you know, as we learn in these teachings, and as the Buddha has always, we've heard the Buddha or the Dalai Lama say, hatred will never eliminate hatred or never overcome hatred. Only love will overcome hatred. And we can only experience love if we come back, let go of projecting to the future and clinging to the past. When we can truly hear our hearts, listen, and feel the ground. Feel this ground here where you are, because as I always say, where you are is the ground of awakening. You're not going to awaken anywhere else but where you are. So that's the ground that you need to feel. That's your country. That's what you need to feel beneath your feet. Any questions or comments about any of this? What are you feeling in this moment? How are you feeling? Joa?
Yes, this election can be very upsetting, and we spoke about it. I felt it was in such a moment. I felt for me it was so important to, as it is said in the suttas, to be the guardian of my senses. And not to, I know that I could just plunge into it and spend my whole day listening to the ongoing news. And I felt this is not the appropriate response, and this is not wholesome to do that. So I try to stay informed, but not just dive not keep on listening, and also because it's not like there is something new every second either. So I feel like being the guardian of our senses in that moment, I feel it's very important, and to rely on that discipline. Feel that's very, it feels very useful right now. So stay present, stay informed, but not being carried away by all this insanity going on.
Yeah, again, that's an example of your practice was made for this moment, to stay aware, stay present, not feed the fires with all of that fuel, like you said. Yeah. Debbie?
Amy, it's very interesting, this business of take away the I, take away the want and happiness, especially as you were saying it, it was happening at moments. But one millisecond later, I hear, what are you so happy about? And then it all kind of blah, 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 and it's over. As if there has to be a justification for feeling well.
Yeah. Yes, it's insidious. It really is. And that's why it's really just moment to moment. Because that voice that wants the justification is the I coming right back. And that's okay. That's okay, it's there. The trick is to not let that take over. You know, it's kind of like what Joe was saying, it's don't let that take over. We stay aware and say, okay, that's just one voice. Just then come back and just happiness. Joanna?
First of all, it's so nice to be here with all of you again. I've been away since August, so it's nice to see all your faces and see that you're feeling well as well, Roshi. Sorry, maybe I'm speaking a bit not so loud. while you were talking, the thing that came up for me was like, what if I stop worrying? Like, because I feel like worrying about something, you know, projecting, you know, being a bit of a pessimist, kind of feels like a shield sometimes. Like, I don't know, like if I stop worrying, then I feel like I would be, you know, then the worst could happen. I don't know, maybe it's like, I feel like worrying about something is like trying to shield myself, trying to find a solution for something that's happening. Not, well, of course I cannot solve the American elections, but I mean, in my own personal life. But I feel as ridiculous as it sounds as I'm saying it. Because maybe if I drop the worry, then I could experience what it's happening now. But sometimes it's hard to see that.
Yeah. Well, and that's a very common pattern as well, that it's as if we even though the worrying is uncomfortable and we know causes us anxiety, it's familiar, or in an unconscious way, it's almost as if, I'm not sure if you said it like this, but it protects us from that, from what we're worried about happening. You know, we keep worrying about it won't happen, or something like that. And so, you know, it's like, then we come back to, well, who's worried? And just this breath, this moment, this sitting. Because during the sitting period, I'm sure there's moments during the sitting period when there's not worry. But then, like, you know, kind of like what Debbie says, it quickly comes back. Christine?
Hi, everyone. It just makes me think a little bit of that the brain always wants to protect what already is. That has been shown in science, that what is familiar, the brain wants to keep us in the same space or in the same thing, because what is familiar is not so much frightening. So if we have the habit of worrying, the brain will make us continue worrying. That's the tendency. It just wants to protect the status quo to keep the ego safe, okay? And therefore meditation is really helpful, because you break a little bit this pattern of always the same thinking pathway. And that allows the brain to create new pathways. So, I just wanted to say that it's really a natural thing, because the brain wants us to survive. And if we are used to not being happy, the brain is not such a good friend for helping us get happier. You really need to change your habits and your thinking habits, and therefore meditation is just perfect. And so I'm really happy, because this morning was the first morning that I could sit again with the group. I hadn't realized that the hours had changed, and with getting the kids to school, and so I couldn't sit with the group for a long time now, but this morning was the first time, which was a great way to start the day. And then in the afternoon, with my choral, you know, Macron didn't tell anything about cultural things, what would happen to the artists and everything like that. But now all those who are working in arts, theaters are closed, nobody has the right, they have the right to practice, but they can't perform. And yeah, during the first lockdown, the teacher or singing
choir director, maybe, or something.
Yeah, she said during the first lockdown she didn't do anything, but now she is so fed up with what happens and doing something like singing together is really the one of those things that make us human, and she wants to continue. So we had a little group of three and we were singing with masks, windows open in the house of a friend of mine, within 1 kilometer distance, so that we can go there with our papers saying we're just having a walk. And it feels like being rebels in the underground, but it made me feel happy because that was a little bit depressing when I thought I couldn't do my activities anymore. And so today, yeah, I'm really feeling quite happy. And I'm happy to see you all. Thank you.
Thank you. That's great. Yeah. And that's the first part of what you said is very enlightening. It clarifies a lot about in a very, you know, concrete scientific way of what does happen in our minds. And that we do have a hard time getting out of our patterns, and that meditation is wonderful exactly for that. That's why we say it's a radical practice, because it's really going against all everything that we think and know and, you know, believe. Yeah. Great that you're rebelling. I mean, I'm happy to hear that you're rebelling and still keeping to the, as best you can, to the recommendations of social distancing and masks and everything. Yeah. Krisha.
Good evening, everyone. I don't know what to say. The poem that Amy shared, it's really strong. It's really, really strong. And I think it's the big sorrows of the world. United States, you've got population divided that don't recognize themselves, the other half. We have that in civil war. We have that in poor countries and rich countries. We have that in between people that want different things. And it's really big, the poem. It's really beautiful and truth, and it's a big truth of the world. I don't know what to say, because I think all that you have shared, it's true, but somehow it's not enough. I think that if I can relate or hear my heart, and if I really listen or really hear to these sounds, perhaps I understand where the other part comes from. And I can be compassive with that. Okay, I can understand, but I can change it. Uh, It's not that I want to change. I don't have that worries about United States, I confess, but it's really a big theme in between all humanity, and I don't know, and it's been here for years and years and years, and we're killing ourselves in that space of not listening each other. And perhaps meditation, I don't know. This is the thing that Paulo Borges always says, and I think it's true. Perhaps meditation, as it is a good training, you know, if we can share this grace with our similars, we can all find the spaces that we don't, that our brain don't feel frightened and can open, listening from the heart and understands that we are all human and we don't want to die. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, ultimately it comes to that, you know, we all want the same thing. We don't want to die. I would even say, you know, we all want the same thing. We all want to be loved. We all want to give love. We all want to receive love. And by not listening to our hearts, then we miss that. We miss it within ourselves, but we then there miss it in the others. And it's as old as humanity, you know. So you see that I sent you the lines of the poem. She says in her article that there are many different translations of it, but she used this translation because she felt like it corresponded best to the Russian, and she is Russian, and that it resonated with how she was feeling in this moment. So I didn't look at any of the other translations because it also resonated for me. So. And I also have been thinking about we don't often do in our Sangha the ceremony in the Gate of Sweet Nectar. We do sometimes, but not very often because we don't do a lot of ceremonies. But at the end of that, traditionally after a talking circle, although we don't usually do that either for various reasons, there's a little song that we chant. The chant is, this is our life, the length of our days. Day and night, we meditate upon it. And that has been really with me these past weeks of, you know, this is my life, the length of my days and nights. Day and night, I meditate upon it. It's just, it's always this, it's always your life, it's always things as they are. That's what the whole practice is about. all of these years of practice have been for this moment, for your life as it is right now here. I think there's also something from the Dalai Lama that's like, something about the past made you who you are now, and what you do now will decide who you will be. So it's actually saying the same thing, because whatever you did in the previous moment leads to who you are right now, and whatever you do in this moment leads to who you will be in the next moment. But it's always in, it's not previous moment and next moment, it's always now. Your entire practice is for this moment, just this moment. And that's how you can feel the ground beneath your feet. You know, that's how you feel your country, your country. Which is actually, we all have, it's one country, right? This earth, this life, this universe, it's just one. But yours is very particular, right where you are. Okay, if there's nothing else, I guess we can stop there. Do the vows and no bows, but vows. Debbie, yeah?
Yeah, there's one more thing. We are so glad to see you, Roshi Amy.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here too. And I thank you all of those who sent me messages and well wishes. And I thank you very much. And those who didn't, I thank you too, because you were there too. So thank you very much.